Recently, I was at my market and thought I saw behind her mask my neighbor Emma. But I am not Emma, the woman chirped. Outside, we fell in step. She asked questions, so many questions. Where do you work? In her lilting Russian accent.
Where do you work? What do you do? My just usual questions. This is my dream work was journalism. And my urgency to communicate to people and ask them about their life, it enriched my life. This is explanation. That's it. But when I heard Rabin, Rabin and NPR.
Well, turns out Galina Lambersky had been trying to reach me to tell her story. And what a story it is. She grew up in the Soviet Union, so she couldn't be a journalist. Her father, Felix Lambersky, was a noted Jewish Ukrainian artist. Stalin's regime offered him riches to paint sunny Soviet propaganda. Instead, he painted scenes from the Nazi Holocaust in Ukraine or exhausted Russian coal workers. After he died, Galina moved her mother, her daughter from a marriage to a man she left after he became a Soviet informant, and all her father's paintings to a crammed apartment. And although an engineer, she took a job managing hair salons, where another KGB informant turned her in on a phony charge, and she was sent to a labor camp, leaving young Elena to strangers. The family and the paintings made it out of the Soviet Union in the 1980s. Galina and Elena are settled around Boston. Elena recently published their breathtaking memoir, Like a Drop of Ink in a Downpour. When we visited, she described the Soviet apartment building she grew up in on the outskirts of Leningrad, now St. Petersburg.
The recently built neighborhoods that all look the same. Russia, in Ukraine.
We're seeing some of them in Ukraine right now being bombed.
And every time I see those buildings bombed in Ukraine, I feel that my old neighborhood is coming down. The buildings were not very beautiful, but we spent a lot of time outdoors in the forest. I remember I have this tactile visual memories of raisin sap on the bark of the pine trees. And when we first moved in, people brought cups of sugar to wish us sweet life.
It's also a very gray existence. Gray rain, gray shawl. At one point you write, my gray heart.
So yes, but when the sun comes out and you see these blue veins of the sky, you feel this burst of gratitude. There's a lot of beauty in, you know, in small things that I remember. Poplar trees blooming in May, and we would play with this little pendants that fall from the branches.
One of the bursts of color and of life is your mother. You write your mother would sail in the door on a blustering wind full of ideas and plans. She was smart, good at math, an engineer, someone who could write poetry, could start conversations with strangers in the street, and they will invite her home. Yes. Galina, were you aware growing up that your father had rejected the Stalinist regime offer of fame and fortune to do?
Not immediately, but a little bit older, yes. I was very proud of him, yes. He rejected this because his vision of art was freedom.
But Galina, everything changes. Your father dies. I'm really fast-forwarding here, but you want to leave the Soviet Union. The way I understand it, Elena, Soviet Jews were allowed, but it came with a price.
So it was a time of Iron Curtain, and the government did everything they could not to allow people to leave, because it burst this idea that Soviet life is good. Some of us could leave with a permission, but as soon as you applied, you became the enemy and you were blacklisted. In elementary school, our teacher was telling our class children, people who want to leave our Soviet Union, our motherland, are traitors. And I felt she was talking to me. I loved my country, but I wanted to be with my mother and with my grandmother.
Yeah. Your grandmother does leave with the painting. She comes to the United States. You both, Galina and Elena, you are just about to get out. Galina, you were framed. And suddenly, you're arrested, taken away on a trumped-up charge. Elena, you come home from school one day and there are the Soviet police tearing apart your apartment. This is heart clasping. Talk about that time, 1981, your mother goes to trial and doesn't come home.
I was 11. I have to tell you that the very first talk that I gave after this book, I wanted to read that first chapter and I couldn't. And this is 40 years after this happened.
Because why, tell us.
For 30 years, we did not talk about our story. When our airplane was taking off from Leningrad, my mother and I made the decision not to talk about our past. We did not want to bring Russia, the repressions, the ugliness of it into our new life. And my hope was that one day I will wake up and it's not there. And when we started writing, all these memories were as if everything happened just yesterday. And when I imagined writing, I thought that I will write an angry expose of the KGB. And I was surprised to see all these memories of my early childhood, the people who were kind, the foster families that took me in. But of course, at that time, I couldn't feel that gratitude, and I only wanted to be with my mother.
And then first a prison, then a labor camp, open toilets and rancid grains and the oatmeal you had to eat every day. You're nodding.
The cold of the winter, and you have to go to the toilet. It was awful. I couldn't go for a month. And then I started to do this. The same with the porridge, that smell, and was gray color. Awful. I couldn't eat it. And then I started to eat.
I think that when women are put to prison, dissidents, refuseniks, women had this additional burden. My mother writes about this sticky bread that felt like clay. And she would see women shaping, fashioning this bread into little toys, little wee foxes, little bears. And my mother would think, here are these women making toys, and their children are alone.
Galina, it sounds as if the lifeline was your being able to at least try to parent your daughter through your letters. I want you to read a portion of one of the letters.
My little bird, original is written with I and not with E, as you have it. Remember this. Neighbors with an H. My little kitten, you are so illiterate. It is frightening.
You're giving her a lesson on spelling. Here's another one that Elena has.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My beloved, precious girl, I would never laugh at you, especially when you are not with me. Always remember this. Everything that you find serious, it is serious to me 100-fold. And what is hurtful is my tragedy. I have little interest in things related to my own person, but each one of your tears is my sobbing.
Sobbing, yeah.
Your smile is my laughter.
Elena, what was it like to get those?
What I remember is that we were together apart, but I never felt alone. When I reread those letters, I felt this overwhelming power, her strength, and the strength that she has given me from prison. And even now that I am in my 50s, I realize that I live my life with the advice that she has given me in these letters.
I didn't think about future at that point. My goal was to survive, to fight, to come back to my daughter.
Galina Lembersky. After she was released from a Soviet labor camp, she took a job as a janitor to secure state housing for Elena until they could leave for the U.S. Their new memoir is like a drop of ink in a downpour. We're going to visit more with the Lembergskis down the road, but right now, some of Felix Lembergski's paintings and an excerpt from the book are at hereandnow.org. And we leave you with Elena playfully reading a letter her mother wrote her from that labor camp 40 years ago.
I received your story about the painting, about the story. It is bad, Elena. Really bad. You ruined the magnificent description of the sand in the sea with the absence of any interest in your protagonist. You took an easy route out and did not take time to think. You did it ad hoc, ship and pray once again. Drivel, drivel, pure shame.
Galina's laughing.
I am so sorry we can't talk face to face, or I tell you so much more. No, my love, foster self-criticism toward everything you do, or you will never improve.
And Elena says they are not victims, they are victors.